National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Gabrielle Denman interviewing Richard Rau. Today is January 22, 1998. This is tape 5, side 9. Richard, how are you feeling today?
Oh, just wonderful.
Terrific. The recorder is Mary Harrison, and we are again meeting at the Anniffin House, which is the headquarters of the National Council of Jewish Women. Richard, last time we ended up with theater in Pittsburgh, and after the tape ran out, you said, remind me to tell the story of Judith Anderson and my mother.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Okay, Richard, will you tell us about the experience of your mother and Judith Anderson?
Judith Anderson, yes, a famous actress who died, I guess, a few years ago. The story, which I got from my mother, so that's about as far as I can really tell you, and I don't have any particular footnotes to this, but my father was at the time about 40 years old. My mother was 21, 22, and when they started dating, my mother had been seeing Mel Morris, who was a football hero at CMU, Carnegie Tech, now Carnegie Mellon. And when my father came along, my mother said that she had to make a decision between my father or Mel Morris. At the same time that this was happening, my father was, she said, dating the movie, stage actress, Judith Anderson. I don't know how that happened. I'm not sure how they met and what how that all worked out, but my mother was very jealous of this, and one night she was driving by the William Penn Hotel where Judith Anderson was staying, and she saw my father's car parked in front of the hotel. And of course, he got hell for that. But ultimately, she, of course, decided against Mel Morris, and also my father decided against Judith Anderson. But the relationship continued between my father and Judith Anderson, at least in terms of letter writing. But after my parents were married, my father, and this is not a very nice thing to say, but this goes on a tape forever, he made my mother call her on the phone and tell her that they were married. He didn't do it himself. I don't know why he didn't have the guts to do it, but he didn't. So she got on the phone and told Judith Anderson that they, in fact, were married. I don't know how Anderson took it, but and they did visited her in New York after the marriage, after they first got married. Well, years went by, and my father died in 1954, and my mother was appearing in a play at the Playhouse, I think in 1955, and Judith Anderson came to Pittsburgh and came backstage to her dressing room, my mother's dressing room, and gave her all these letters my father had written to Judith Anderson. And my mother told me she went home and threw them in the fireplace.
Oh, good luck.
And burned every one of them.
Because my next question would have been, do you have them still? Okay.
I would give a lot of money there, too, to have one of those letters. Then, in 1972, 17 years later, Judith Anderson came into Pittsburgh again, this time to do a reading of Hamlet and other things, and it was at the Carnegie Music Hall, and it wasn't very good. It wasn't a very interesting program, because most of the time, almost all of the time, she spent reading the material rather than relating eye contact to the audience. So after the show, my mother at that time was dating or seeing or going out with Milton Sussman, who was a columnist at the Jewish Chronicle. And I was also at that time dating a woman who is now married. And the four of us went backstage to see Judith Anderson. My mother said, I really want you, Richard, to meet her. So we go backstage, and Anderson was very short. I had imagined her being very tall, and she wasn't. And she greeted us kind of a little distant. And I remember her saying, "Oh, Richard, you look so much like your father." And I said, "Well, thank you very much." And my mother was trying to be very chatty about the whole thing. And she said, "Well, you know, Judith, we haven't seen each other for many years. How would you like to go out, have a drink with all of us?" "Oh, no, Helen. No, I can't spare a moment. But if you're ever in San Francisco, look me up." And my mother turned, and we all walked out of her dressing room. And she said, "I will never see her again." And that was the end of Judith Anderson. I find it interesting. I don't really understand all the dynamics of it. And as I have said to you folks, I do have a record made in 1947 in which she discusses in a rather jovial fashion her her involvement with my father and his involvement with Judith Anderson. There are a few things on the record that I haven't said which would be helpful. You can, when we tape that, or when I tape that, you can put that into the record, but I can't remember everything. There's one or two other little odd things about their relationship, but it really did end when my parents married, and there was other than letter writing, that was it.
Now, for the record, Richard mentions that he has several 78 RPM records that he will transfer
yes.
to tape for our oral history.
Right.
But do you want to mention the other records at
sure.
this point?
One of the records is me, recorded in 1947, called Dickie's Songs and Stories. One side of the record is Dickie's Songs, and the other side is Dickie's Stories. On the one side, the record begins with Dickie singing Linda, a popular tune. When I go to sleep, I never count sheep. I count all the charms about Linda. Something like that. And there are other songs, including one that I invented on the spot, which is incomprehensible to me. And listening to it, I don't understand it. It has... The first line is something about green and yellow roses growing in the ground. When you hear it, you'll see if you can put that together.
What age were you?
Seven.
Okay.
On the other side of the record are these stories, one of which is the Greek myth of Icarus, which ends the record on the second side, in which Icarus... had his wings melted because he flew too close to the sun. I haven't the slightest idea, as I told you before, how I came up with that Greek legend. And I told it moderately well, I guess. And I don't know, I don't think I had a script. I don't think I know I didn't. Another record is of my father being interviewed around 1952. He was friends, sort of friends, with a composer named Giancarlo Menotti, who I think is still alive, and or maybe he isn't, I don't know. But anyway, Menotti composed operas, semi-classical opera, light operas or whatever. I remember when I was a little boy growing up watching his Amal and the Night Visitor. It's a Christmas thing that Menotti had done. Well, anyway, my father was being interviewed after the premiere of a Menotti piece, and I don't know what the name of it is, and Gloria Abdu is the interviewer, and my father speaks on this record. There is another record of my grandmother's 74th birthday in which my mother, my father, my aunt Helen, and my great-uncle Bert Florsheim all speak to her and say things, poetry, tributes to her on her 74th birthday. I don't know why they didn't pick the 75th, but then that's left to history. And that was recorded in 1939. And I think that's it.
Can you tell us who Gloria Abdu
was? Gloria Abdu was an actress in Pittsburgh and also a prominent radio personality, I think on WCAE, which is now WTAE, or WJAS. Well, I don't know. confused about that. Anyway, Gloria Abdu was a performer both at the Pittsburgh Playhouse back in the 50s and also a radio personality. I believe she's still alive.
Okay.
As of 1998.
Now, your mother's name was Helen Wayne Rouse.
Well, let me go through that real quickly so you know. She was born Helen Barbara Sisson Wayne. Helen Barbara Sisson Wayne, S-I-S-E-N-W-A-I-N. She didn't like her middle name. And when she got to, when she graduated from Carnegie Tech in 1933, she began to use the name Helen Wayne, W-A-Y-N-E, which was a change from the she took the Sisson off and changed the Wayne into W-A-Y-N-E. When she met my father, she simply added the Rao and became Helen Wayne Rao probably around 1935.
Now, on the first tape, I believe, you, when you talked about your mother, you said you really didn't have very much information about her.
And I still don't. However,
have a little more.
Just a wee bit more. She went to South Hills High School in Beachview. She was born in Beachview. I was up in that house once when I was a little boy. It's up on a hill somewhere. I think the street was Alvarado Street. But on the other hand, I may be confused here. It may be that she was born in Sandusky, Ohio, because a lot of her family came from Ohio. The most I can tell you about these people is that her father was named Edward Sisson Wayne, and he married a woman named Leona, but I don't know her married name, her maiden name. I can't believe I can't remember. Anyway, they had three children. My mother, who was born in 1912, and my uncle, Bob, Robert Sisson Wayne, who died the same year my mother did in 1993, and they had a sister named Sylvia, who is still alive, and she is now about 91 or 90. And she and her husband, who is also alive, Roland Miller, lived together in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And they had one son, and his name was Holmes, H-O-L-M-E-S Miller. We call him Bunky, and I don't know why. And Holmes Miller had three children. Stephen, who is now in his 20s, and I think he lives in Georgia, in Atlanta. Rebecca, who is going to the Rhode Island School of Design and is a very, very accomplished painter. And Julie, who is the youngest of his children, of Roland and Sylvia's children, lives in Allentown, I guess is still going to high school. My mother's brother, Robert Sisson Wayne, married a woman named Gertrude Sisson Wayne. Gertrude Sachs. I believe that's S-A-C-C-H-S. And they had two children. Robert and Gertrude had two children who are my cousins. One is Edward Sisson Wayne. And his wife's name is Sandy. My other cousin is Nancy Ruth, his sister, and she married a fellow named Danny Iacucci, and that's I-A-C-U-R-R-C-I. And they had three girls, Melissa, Allison and Jennifer. Melissa is now now I think at Duquesne University.
So they live in Pittsburgh.
They live in Pittsburgh, right?
Have you any idea what your grandfather's system was? I hate to say did, but for better word.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I do remember his wife Leona. She was a delightful person, and she died in 1948. I think around 68, and I remember her briefly, but she was a very nice person. I do have couple of photographs of her. It's interesting that both of my cousins, Edward Sissonwane and Nancy Ruth, married Catholics, so that her husband, Danny E. Akerchi, is Catholic, and Edward's wife, Sandy, who comes from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, is Catholic also. Oh, Sandy and Edward have two children, Bradley and Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N. And Lauren goes to Schenley High School, where she's interested in theater, and I don't know what Bradley does. I don't know where he is. I have seen photographs of Edward. Did I say Edward Sissonwane? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but the father is Edward also. I have seen photographs, however, of his father. His name was Max Sissonwane. And his wife was Carolyn Baer, B-A-E-R. And I have a picture of her sitting on the steps of a porch in Sandusky, Ohio, about 1906. I don't know what they did either.
Have you any idea where that family came from?
No. And if I can ever get my act together, I can find out the cemetery where Max's father is buried in Pittsburgh with his wife. And I don't know their names. They all are, of course... A lot of them migrated from Russia, whereas my father's side all migrated from Germany. And one other member of my mother's family that I've left out is Ida Blatt, B-L-A-T-T. She lived to be about 95, and she was the equivalent in the Sissonwane family of my great uncle. She had all the money, and she came to New York City as a young woman and got into the jewelry business, I think. And she was a remarkable woman. I didn't really know her that well, but she always wanted to see that I got married. We discussed that a lot. And but she was a very nice lady, and just did everything on her own. She kind of did the same kind of thing Uncle Bert did. He did everything on his own also and made all this money, and it was he who did it. And I think only once did they meet.
Did she ever met?
No. I'm sorry. Yes, excuse me, she did. I don't know what his name was.
Okay.
Yeah, she was a really interesting woman.
See, so you did remember.
I now remember him remembering things. And my mother, I think she had a fairly normal childhood, but she did get to CMU at exactly the time when the Great Depression hit. And Rhoda Sholem congregation, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, gave her a scholarship to go through Carnegie Tech because she didn't have any money.
That's very interesting. That was a family member, a member of a show.
Yes.
I see. So she probably was in plays with them.
That I don't know. She never talked about that. And there's no references nor any playbills.
And at that time, CMU was Carnegie Tech.
Carnegie Tech.
Did she have any classmates that we consider now famous?
Well, one of them she knew, whether he was in her class or not, was Robert Cummings, the movie actor. And she told me this story that one night they were all in a rehearsal and they came late to rehearsal. When they got there, Cummings was standing there by the stage door entrance with a cane rapping on the floor, and he said, "This is the reason none of you will make it. I am on time, and I will become famous," or something like that.
Wow.
And they all were angry at him for being such a big, pretentious character, but he did go right on to Hollywood. Right after his graduation from Carnegie Tech, he went on and began being in movies almost immediately, I think in the 30s. My earliest, I've seen him in one or two movies in the 40s, but he had a great career. My mother also had a good friend of hers named Polly Rolls, who now lives in New York City. She's now in her 80s. In fact, I intend to see her in a couple of weeks because I'm going to New York. She went to Hollywood, made a few movies, one of which I taped recently called Variety Girls of 1938. It's not very good, but it's in color. She told me that she couldn't really make a living out in Hollywood. She made about five movies, one of them with Gene Autry. She then moved to New York City and became well-known in the New York Broadway area, and more recently ended up her life doing Hanes underwear commercials on television, which became very famous. She was very recognizable. She's not a well-known name, but she's still a lively lady, and she's still, I talk to her occasionally. There were others, I believe. Franklin Schaffner, who became a big television producer, was in my mother's class. There were quite a few tech people, you know. It's generally the case that they go on to often to bigger and better things. I don't remember exactly who was in that class.
Can we talk a little more, or can you fill us in a little more about your childhood years? You mentioned family vacations with Beach Haven.
Yes, we went to Beach Haven starting in 1944. Yes. And then in 1945, I went to Deer Creek, which we can talk about shortly.
Right.
And then we went to Beach Haven from 1946 up to 1954. But that year, my father had his heart attack and died. But then we continued going to Beach Haven. We had rented a cottage from Dave Saylor, who was a professor of engineering at Carnegie Tech, Carnegie Mellon. And we continued living, going to that cottage until 1961, when he sold the house. And that was the only vacation place that we went to as a family. My father, and in those days it was like going through the pioneer times. There was no Pennsylvania Turnpike. There was part of one, but it wasn't a big, long one. It took us 10 to 12 hours to get to Beach Haven. You know, it's funny when you think back on it. We had all kinds of goofy experiences. Like when I had to go to the bathroom, I had to go into outhouses all through the Pennsylvania farming world in central Pennsylvania. And so we would take Route 222, or 322 rather, and when Dickie had to go to the bathroom, my father would stop, I'd jump out of the car and run into the nearest outhouse, and this was a big deal. My father was terrible with road maps. He never consulted them. We got lost constantly in eastern Pennsylvania, particularly in the Philadelphia area, and we would always visit my aunt, Edna, who was Uncle Bert's sister, and she had been married to a man named Albert Bamberger, and he died, and he had a son. Then she had a stepson named Justin, who was, I guess, from his marriage to somebody else. And then Aunt Edna didn't marry again and lived in Philadelphia in Rittenhouse Square until she died in 1972, about the age of 94, 95.
Was it a one-day trip from Pittsburgh?
Oh, yes. We'd start about 7 in the morning and get there about 5 in the evening. It was a long, long trip for me. The closer we got to the seashore, the happier I got. But it was done on a very primitive scale. The Pennsylvania Turnpike, which had been built in 1940, was only completed through to Carlisle. And then by 1952, it was finished through to Valley Forge. And even then, the Schuylkill Expressway, which now goes through central Philadelphia, had not been completed. So we had to leave the turnpike sometimes, and that's when we really got lost. It was quite an interesting experience. And my father simply refused to look at road maps. And it was me, my mother, Connie, who would sit in the back seat, and we would go back and forth on roads, and I just...
And
very strange.
Did you go to Beach Haven? How long did you stay?
Usually 4 to 6. Usually 6 weeks.
So it was worthwhile.
Very much so. I loved Beach Haven. It was a wonderful place to be. We had in the first 2 years we had no phone, and my father got very upset about that because he couldn't make any business calls. He couldn't, or he didn't make them, or he was out of touch with the Pittsburgh thing. Then he decided he would go home on certain weekends, and there were a bunch of businessmen from Pittsburgh in Beach Haven. They'd all pile into a car and drive back to Pittsburgh for the weekend and then come back. Now, remember, this is this trip, which is close to 370 miles. And in those days, that was like, you know, going across the plains when you were, you know, the early pioneers. But I love Beach Haven. Extraordinarily loved it. I had so much fun there, and in the early years, I met a little girl named Katie Norton, and she and I palled around. She was like my sister, and she had a very strange family. Her mother wouldn't go anywhere, and her father was a real Marine type, and her brother eventually ended up in the Marines. And Katie and I hung around together from 1946 to around 1953, when she decided that she needed to branch out, and I was just too retarded for her, I guess, and she started dating boys in Beach Haven. And I didn't really see her again until 1955, and then she was already grown up, and then we didn't see each other again until 1961, and that's the end of it. I haven't seen her since. I don't know what happened to her. I didn't like her father. I thought her mother was very strange.
Okay. You want to tell us about your... Were you 1 year at Deer Creek one summer?
Well, I can't tell you much about Deer Creek, except I remember two incidences. The bus would take... There was a bus, and it would take us to Deer Creek. And the reason, by the way, that I went to Deer Creek was my mother and father told me, it's one of the few times that I didn't get my way, because I was a real brat. I was a kid, a spoiled child. My parents told me that the war was on. I didn't know what that meant, but that we'd been rationing everything, and gasoline was rationed, and we had rationing coupons, and he didn't want to drive to New Jersey that summer. Now, the war was ending in 1945, but not quite that quickly, so we didn't go. Anyway, I went to Deer Creek, and every day we'd go past this couple that sat on the porch, and we'd have to yell out the window, "Good morning." What was it? Mr. and Mrs. Geesey. Geesey, how do you know that?
Because my rolled band down Deer Creek.
Oh, my God.
And I remember that.
Help. yes, and we would go past, and this old couple, I guess this old couple, they're sitting on the porch in the rocking chairs. We all used to think, why do we have to do this every time we go out there? But we did that. And we would yell out the window, Mr. and Mrs. Geesey. And the other thing I remember was that Deer Creek was sort of a strange little camp, and I don't know, I never quite got with things, but I remember one day we were out playing, and I threw a rock in the air and hit a kid in the head, and I thought, it's all over for me, and I fled into the woods to hide. I didn't want anybody to find me. And they had to go searching for me. I don't know. Eventually they found me. I don't know. I was scared to death. And then I came back, and they said the kid was all right. It was a little blood and everything. And I just remember this incident. It was so traumatic. Wow. I thought I had killed him.
Oh, dear, dear, dear.
My first murder. Oh, excuse me. That means I have murdered somebody. Subsequently.
Go on.
But that's all I remember about Deer Creek. I was there that one summer, and next summer, boom, we were in Beach Haven with our cottage. We had rented a house in 1944 from some people in Beach Haven on 7th Street. It was like a duplex or something. And anyway, But the summer of 46, we then went to Beach Haven, and we had a cottage on 3rd Street, and it was wonderful.
But many Pittsburghers still go to Beach Haven.
Yes, but I always said that my father was one of the really first Pittsburghers to go there, and because he had a big mouth, as I do, we talked it up. He talked it up so much that he got all the Pittsburghers to start coming down there. And by the 1960s, it was packed.
Excuse me, am I correct to say that the preceding place for Beach Haven before that was Atlantic City?
No, it was Beach Haven.
No, but I mean, what, the popular place before?
Oh, probably. And there were other places like Ventnor and Margate, but I don't know. Beach Haven was not known. In fact,